Go play and drop.
If y'all would, I'd like to go ahead and call this meeting to order. It's for the public hearing. So we'll just go ahead and get right on with the business. So he's going to read the orders. We'll just call the meeting to order.
First reading, ordinance number 2022-06, an ordinance relating to the rezoning docket 2022-Z-25 of 15.01 acres more or less, located at 12911 South Preston Highway, owned by SNF Investments LLC, map number 042-000-00-010. Whereas SNF Investments LLC is the owner of 15.01 acres more or less, located at 12911 South Preston Highway in the city of Lebanon Junction, whereas said owner has applied according to law for a change of zoning of said acreage from B1 Highway Business to IG Heavy Industrial, and whereas the Bull County Planning and Zoning Commission has given a favorable recommendation and recommends the zoning request be approved for the following reasons and with the following restriction. Number one, the requested zoning change is in agreement with the adopted comprehensive plan. Number two, the opponents objected to the proposed zoning change on the following basis. Residents are concerned by adequate screening around the residential area, traffic, and the egress and ingress to the development in regard to the existing railroad tracks, drainage into the neighboring property since this property is located within the floodplain. The following restriction was placed on the property by planning and zoning: directional lighting on the property with the lighting being directed away from residential neighborhood. Now, therefore, be it ordained by the City Council of the City of Lebanon Junction, Bullitt County, Kentucky, that Section 1, the City Council of the City of Lebanon Junction either accepts or rejects the recommendation of the Bullitt County Planning and Zoning Commission. Section 2, this ordinance shall take effect upon publication according to law. Section 3, should any clause, line, paragraph, or part of this ordinance be held unconstitutional or invalid for any reason, the same should not affect the remainder of the ordinance. Section 4, all ordinances or parts of ordinances in conflict with this ordinance or any part of this ordinance are hereby repealed.
Right. Eric's here.
Eric, first, would you like to speak?
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor. I'm going to ask those who are with me tonight to Steve Scott to first step up here with me and help me present. I'm not going to take a lot of time, but we wanted to make sure we all were able to understand what we're doing. With me for my term tonight to Emily Vessels and Hannah Kahn, and Hannah's going to help by passing out some material so that you can see these a little closer up, and then I'm going to run through these with you. Also with us tonight is Mr. Bob Fessler. He's with the Sansone Group. Bob is with a company that is ultimately seeking to develop this property and to build the distribution centers that we hope to build on this. As Hayden indicated, we've been to the Planning Commission with this project. A couple of the neighbors came forward and had some very important input that we have taken into consideration, and Bob spent some time talking with them after the meeting, and the Planning Commission has sent this file to you with a favorable recommendation, and we appreciate that and hope that you all will be able to provide us with the rezoning that we're seeking. This property is located in, and you'll see this on the aerial, it's part of the five-page document I gave you. It's in the southeast quadrant of I-65 and 61. It is right, it's surrounded on the side here, of course, by Big Root Road. This property is the bulk of it, 123 some odd acres, is already heavy and industrial. So all we are seeking to do here is take the remaining 12, 13 acres in this corner, right next to 61 and Lee Booth, and have that rezoned to light industrial, excuse me, heavy industrial as well. On the pages here that are in front of you, you can see that on the bright colored sheet, this is the top of comprehensive plan for the county that gives us what the zoning is surrounding all of this area. This particular property with the star on it is the one we're talking about, the whole tract. And it's purple because it's a split under the zoning zoning regulations, meaning this part is heavy industrial and this part is B1. So the B1 part is all we're talking about. The property to the side, to the east of it, is already heavy industrial. The property to the north of it is heavy industrial. The property across the interstate from it is light industrial. So all of this is essentially has been earmarked for industrial zoning since the inception of zoning regulations. The plan for the community, the comprehensive plan, indicates that the county's unincorporated areas will continue to see a decline in agricultural acreage and an increase towards industrial, commercial, and residential uses. You'll recall we recently had this annexed into your city, and so when I reference what the unincorporated areas have, that is the same provision that applies in the comprehensive plan. So this does in fact comply with the county comprehensive plan, and in fact the planning and zoning staff report that was provided to the planning commission also indicated that the property should be industrial under the plan and not business only. We did, as I said, have the input from the neighbors. One of the concerns was lighting. As you know, with a lot of the larger structures and with the parking area that's required, there is parking over the parking zones for the people to be able to see when it is dark. One of the conditions is that that lighting is to be downward cast so that it does not splay out and bleed over into the residential, adjacent residential zones. And there are specific lighting products that allow for that, and that is now a restriction on this property that the property owners have signed and is ready to be reported in the county clerk's office. No problem agreeing to that. The zoning regulations that we have in place already require certain setbacks between a residential tract and an industrial tract, side yards of 100 feet on the residential. And in addition, there's certain screening that is required. So we will be in compliance with whatever kind of regulatory setback and screening is necessary in order to be able to get the building permits that would be necessary after zoning approval.
Steve, is there anything else I'm
missing? This plan is preliminary. You know, what we're talking about here is two different buildings. The ultimate plan would have to be taken to the zoning office. The zoning administrator would go through it with input from buyer, city authorities, and so forth. I will say and give a shout of thanks to the mayor, Hayden, our city engineer, for spending time with us to talk about not only this project and the service of water and sewer to it, but the impact of that on the entire area surrounding the interstate, and also the impact on other developments that may be contemplated whether commercial or industrial development or even residential, it will benefit the city and ultimately with the improvement to your infrastructure. So we look forward to getting that further resolved.
Something I've mentioned is that our only access is off 61. We don't have any planned access on the lead loop.
Right. That's a very good point. We don't want to add to traffic on that at this point. There's no requirement from anybody that we do that. We'll be working with the transportation cabinet and CSX improvements there, and we've already reached out on both of those. Any questions that we might be able to ask from any of you?
Everybody has signed the sheet. Anybody got any questions? Council? Anybody?
What all the already stated and other things, and it appears that the things that people have come to me about regarding that has already been addressed and taken care of. The drainage, water flow, all of that stuff has already been discussed. So I feel pretty confident what my people are worried about, it's been addressed.
Well, thank you. It's really nice to see run out after the meeting and try to get away from the neighbors. He actually spent some time talking to him to address those concerns. It is a tract that really is not suitable for any kind of development, really, other than this, because it's this kind of development that could afford to improve that land, which we all know is low. So it's going to take a lot of work. But it'll be done in a very responsible manner, and nothing can be done that increases runoff from that which is already there. We have to keep it the same. So.
Is there any adjacent property owners here tonight?
I do not know.
Well, evidently you satisfied them with the lighting issue.
Well, I hope so.
On this list, too, we have Bob Fessler.
That's this gentleman.
Do you want to speak? Awesome.
So I'm fine.
Just with him. You just had your name together. I think that's sure.
He was here to answer any questions.
I'm just trying to teach Eric how to do this.
There you go. Yeah.
Excellent teacher.
Charles, no other discussion? Anything?
Okay. And you're all July meeting, if I may ask.
I know we're going to have another meeting to get our budget done, and we should probably go ahead and have a second meeting then.
We're having a special second meeting
okay. For
our budget reading. We have to get that in.
Either
so we have a first reading of our budget tonight, and we'll schedule one for that. So if we need to put the second.
I'll check with you. Thank you.
Make sure you know, Eric. Thank you.
All right. Thank you all very much. You'll excuse us. We'll let you business then.
There you go.
Yeah.
With that, I entertain a motion.
I know what we're having.
Motion to close the meeting.
Motion closed.
Motion been made to close the meeting.
Seconded.
Seconded. All in favor? All right. So we will move on to the regular meeting.
Thankful for all your blessings and for all that you do for us. We just praise you for the day. Lord, in your word you said there is safety among a multitude of counselors. And so, God, I just pray for this council. I pray for our mayor today, God, that anything that might come before them, that you would give them wisdom and that you would give them knowledge and understanding. And God, that all decisions will be made out of compassion and love for our community. And we just ask that you bless each and every one of us, and we just give you praise and ask it all in Jesus' name.
Amen. Amen. With that, I'll call the June 6, 2022 meeting to order. Show me the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Right. Thank you, everybody, for coming out. We got a lot on the agenda, so we'll move as good as we can with it. Motion to accept the minutes from the previous meeting.
I'll make the motion to accept the minutes from the previous meeting. I'm setting an alley seat tonight, so I guess I got it.
All in favor? All righty. We'll start out with insurance connections. Are we ready?
We want to keep coming back. Here. I think everybody knows us, so I won't do the intro, but it's my wife Nancy and my son Joe and I, the insurance director. Hope y'all don't mind me sitting up here.
Sir.
I don't hear very well and don't see a whole lot better anymore. Nobody else me. But we're pleased to be here as well, and we prepared our normal packet for you. But I got to say, it's the first time in a long, long time that we actually report a net decrease in insurance premiums. And I don't know when that has happened.
Sure.
Mainly because of flood and FEMA rating 2.0, KLC's up a little bit, but it's really good to be able to come in and actually not be a headache for you guys. And we're hoping not. I'm going to run through some information in here, but I wanted to begin. I was looking at my notes last year, and we ended our presentation with, we see inflation coming down the road. I never saw the freight train of inflation coming the way it has. Last I read, that putting food and energy, it was used to be in there when we were all in high school, it's actually 17-18%. So I think inflation is now the challenge going ahead. Thought we were doing great coming out of COVID, we went straight into inflation. Something happened on December 10th here in Kentucky, and it's EF4 tornado hit much of western Kentucky. No one really saw that coming, and because of that, I think that's another inflation challenge that we're all going to be looking at. When KLC was settling the losses, what they've learned is many of the municipalities did not have adequate insurance on the buildings, the water towers to replace them, because no one ever thought that it's going to rip up the foundation of a water tower. You think, like when I do replacement cost estimators for people's homeowners, they always say, well, my basement will still be there, the foundation will be there, and we are not necessarily so with the EF4. So I think we're going to see that challenge down the road, as well as commercial auto. But I was really tickled. Last fall, KLC sent out a professional engineering firm. 5 years ago, they sent out one of their employees, but this firm was out of Indianapolis, and we spent the day riding to every water tower. I now know how the water flows in and how it flows out, and the guy did a really good job of summarizing. Building values didn't change much, but when he looked at the value of the equipment, that's where he really changes, so much so that we're adding 27% coverage on y'all's property and still able to hold rates down, which I'm tickled about. KLC took the first time I've ever seen them do this. They instituted 10% inflation on every building in Kentucky that they insure. Normally, 3-4%. So they are trying to get ahead of the problem down the road. Glad y'all did the rate stabilization agreement. That's still helping us as well. And I always start on the main page, and I bring the premiums right to the front so you don't have to go through 50 pages of KLC. What I don't do is have the flood premiums here, but on flood, you're going to save about $4,300 between the two buildings on the flood. So you can see with the net increase on KLC between the liability, the property, and the work comp, the flood decrease is going to more than cover that. Put about $1.2 million more on the buildings, so significant there. Last year we added four newer vehicles, and we took off two older vehicles. Vehicles look like they're going to be a challenge in the future, just getting them replaced. I've got some of my entities that are having to put orders in 2 years in advance to predict when the vehicles will no longer be serviceable. And I've got some insurers who are happy because they bought a truck last year, sell it for more this year than they paid for, and used it a whole year. So the commercial auto, I think, will be the challenge down the road. Circle graph, and I'm just going to fly as quickly as I can. Y'all stop me if you have questions, but you've been through this before. I'm a visual person, so it's about five pages back in the presentation there. And what I want to see is, what is that big blue graph? And it's commercial auto, and that's what I would expect. The next biggest graph is your workers' comp, which is investing in protecting your people, which is what we would want to see as well. I normally don't slow down on the brochures and that, because you don't want to buy insurance on bells and whistles. You just hope if when something bad happens, you've got as many ancillary coverages as you can dig into. But on the next page behind the circle graph, I pulled something out of the liability section. Unfortunately, this has become a reality that so many communities are facing, and it's what to do in a crisis if we have an active situation. I like to get this information in as many hands as I can for the council, because it seems like bad things happen on Christmas break or Thanksgiving, and maybe the office staff isn't in there. So that graph has the crisis hotline number, what to do in a crisis. Right behind that, I'm not going to read that to you, but they talk about what coverage forms change. Every year when you get your home and auto policies, I know everybody reads them all, I'm sure. But every year at the front of them, they've got, hey, we changed this and that. Some of the things can be a bigger concern. Last year, my bigger concern was the cyber liability did take a step backwards, but it's all KLC. They don't have any other option. So I'm going to flip to section two, and that's our general liability section. Not overly complicated. In 2021, we knew that you all were looking at the new CSX project. Was going to require $5 million instead of $3 million in liability that they always did. So we moved your liability up to $5 million back then. We didn't move the auto and the professional law enforcement and that. General liability changes are very, very small premium-wise. When you get to moving auto and professional and public officials, it is going to get into a bigger premium. But the insurance companies always be glad to sell you more, typically, I found. If you ever want that, we can certainly request the higher limits. Page two, again, I normally don't slow down, but up the top, third line down, because you all cooperated with the engineer when he came out and did survey, you actually got a 6% credit on the policy, which is how it helped hold down the increase in the property premium that would have happened otherwise. After that, I'm gonna flip back. It's three pages back. And this is the important page. Last year, you all did a great job because you looked at it and you saw some vehicles on there that we shouldn't have had on there, which we all want to know and get them off. My bigger concern as an agent is I never want to have a vehicle not on there that's supposed to be. So if everybody can look at that, and if you see something crazy, let us know. We'll get it added on. Premium or your coverage amount on your auto, we're up to about $1.5 million in auto coverage. Premium is around $22,000. I just do the, we have 22 power units, one trailer. I do the math and go, okay, it's roughly $1,000 per auto, which is not a lot different than a personal auto policy starts out. I'm going to flip now, and if y'all want me to slow down, speed up, stop me, let me know. The property section number three, I kind of want to pause on that a little bit, because we think sometimes property is just buildings. It's not. It's the equipment in the ground. It's the water towers. It's the filtration equipment. I was amazed what the ultraviolet lights cost to replace that system. So there's a great deal of scope in the property coverages. And as you can see on the front end, we have $4.7 million in blanket property coverage. I call the first page and the last page of this section the bookends, because on page one, you can see that we clearly got KLC to give you blanket coverage. On the last page of this section, I won't flip there now, you can clearly see a few years back, we got them to also add agreed value. And what that means at time of loss is there is no question whether you have the right coverage amount. Now, get a 2 mile wide EF4 tornado through, you still, if you lose every building, that's your cap there, and you hope that's enough. Some of the cities and that found that they did not have enough last year. Total premium on the property, just to give y'all an idea, $4,700 to protect 40 $4.7 million in premium. Inland Marine, which is back a pretty good ways, almost to back, and we'll go there in a second. But Inland Marine, I'm really tickled. Since 2017's first visit of the KLC's employee who did the loss engineering, we have added $600,000 in Inland Marine coverage. A lot of it fire department related, where we had the chief do a detailed survey of what's in every truck, what's on every truck. So I'm tickled that if there were a loss, instead of looking at getting $180,000, you now have up to $800,000 in Inland Marine coverage, and we'll flip back there in a second. Almost to the back of this section, I'm not going to ask you to find it even. When you get home, it's a list of every property we have and how much coverage is on it, and if we have business personal property, how much business personal property is covered. This list was a result. As a matter of fact, I already had the renewal packet done, and Monday night before I was going to meet with the mayor, KLC says, no, not that 4 or 10%. You got a 27% increase. That's what shows in these numbers here is the adjusted increased amounts. As I mentioned, the agreed value endorsement is on the very last page of this, and about third from the last, fourth from the last, you get into it. Okay, this is all of the equipment that we have covered, including the digital radio project. I think it is at $87,000 on that. Section 4 gets easier yet. It's your work comp. Work comp is not a complicated policy because it's state law. It is run by the state as far as what benefits are provided. So it's not something that you have to look and make sure you have the right property values and all that. The whole key is three pages back, or a couple pages back, I'm sorry, is the payroll and the rate for the payroll. I'm going to mention a couple things. KLC, for the last 4 years in a row, has decreased the rate in these payroll classes, at least some of them, but more importantly, the emergency responders. That's where your real premium is, the rate per $100 of payroll. And we saw another decrease this year, and that's why your work comp went down, along with one other factor. On the very next page, they tell you, okay, we start with one number, and then we garbly goop it up and start adding discounts and surcharges and all that kind of stuff. I'm not overly worried about going through that, obviously, but I do want to point out something KLC did for the first time since we've written your comp. You used to, about three quarters of the way down the page here, there's a risk modification factor or a risk assessment modifier. Used to be a 4% discount, has been for several years. KLC applied a 15% discount there this year. What that helps do, your loss mod is still hovering at 1.1, which means you're paying 10% more than you would if it was 1.0. Anything below 1.0, you get a discount for that. That helped cover that loss modifier, and they're doing it because even though your loss mod is at low over 1, they recognize your work comp claim history is really, really good. So they were trying to give you the discounts there to help mitigate the premium increase. Last section, always about premium payment options, and I won't stop to read you all that. But I will slow down and see if you guys had any questions or anything I didn't cover. I know you got a lot of stuff to do tonight.
Typically, same as every year, just some increases in coverages and some increase in the payment.
Exactly. And the main thing is we just don't want it to be real painful in 1 year. And I know you've been through it before. For the last 12 years, there has not been a what we call a hard market in insurance. And I know you probably remember what that was. Well, used to be, you could literally have a policy expiring at $100,000. Say, next year, it's $160,000 with no notice to you. State legislature says, well, that's not fair. You need to give them notice. If it's going to go over 25%, you got to give them 90 days written notice. Well, now they all just mail you 90-day written notice and say, hey, if we go over 25%, here's your notice. And so what you want to see with these premiums is not that kind of increase.
Right.
I know it's quick, but we appreciate the city, and we start working on this around February. Last year, the engineering thing was in late fall, and it takes a while to put together, and it takes your staff time, and we appreciate everybody's input. So the fire chief did a great job on his equipment, the police chief did a great job on his equipment. It's just a, Chad always helpful. It's a combination effort of everybody.
I guess as usual, we'll get the payment to you before the 15th. I said, we'll get your payment to you before July 15th.
That's cool. That's cool. KLC knows it takes a while. And I've got several accounts with Kimmy. Kimmy, technically, if you don't have premium there before the day of, it expires. So we always have to say, hey, put a block on that account because you can't pay it in this year.
Right. So with the payment being there, the motion to pay it?
Yeah.
Entertain a motion to pay the bill? $69,405.24.
Motion to pay it.
Tim made a motion. Anybody go second? Connie seconded. Poll, please.
Jenny?
Yes.
Joe?
Yep.
Tim?
Yes.
Connie?
Yes.
Teresa?
Yes.
All right.
Thank you all.
Steve, appreciate you, buddy.
Appreciate your time.
All right. We'll move right into the old business, try to speed up things here. I'd like to give a big thanks to the drug court. They've been coming out every 2 to 3 years, bringing the people that's in the drug court system, and they help us tremendously around town doing some things. Rodney Burris and them came, they brought in the excess of 20 people, a lot of friends, family, people that graduated from the drug court in the past came with them to support them. They cleaned the cemetery, they cleaned all the flower beds down in the park, they walked the streets and did some oddity stuff, and they brought lunch for them and everything down to the pavilion. They stayed about 3 hours that day, and I really like for everybody to know, if they ever have drug court, and they do every year, as they graduate from that over to the courthouse, it's in the afternoon, like a Thursday, I don't know what day it's actually on, but it's something to remarkably see. And I want to stress something real quick on that note. As they come up there to it, they have a testimonial thing, and each person stands up and gives their name and what their problem is. If it may be Larry, I'm a drug addict or whatever, and then they go ahead and they start talking about the history of it and where the drug court has took them and how much they've escalated up back into society, where they've caused problems for the society and where the communities helped them. And the thing that really stuck in my mind was all those things that they talked about and how they did. You just had to hurt it all. But one thing I do want to put emphasis on was several of the men has gotten jobs now in other areas. A couple of them went to work for Mount Washington in the water and sewer and the public works, doing great. All of them in the court did and has so far, and they haven't graduated as of yet. This is part of their probation status that they have to do it. Well, the thing that they made a point of was actually talking about the police departments. One of them mentioned a person right up front. Bratcher was working for us for a while. He went to work for Mount Washington, and a guy stepped up to the plate and about ready to tear up his eyes. He said, I actually hated the man. I thought when the blue lights come on, but in the same token, he saved my life. And he said, Bratcher, he treated me like a family member. I was treating nice getting into the car when I got over there, and that showed me that people does care. And since then, he mentioned his name several times, and he praised the Lebanon Junction Police Force, and every one of them that got up there had something to say, and they said, one of them said right up front, he said, I'd like to take a ball back to Terry Phillips a couple of times, I'm telling you. And he said, but you know, when you get right down to it and you figure out that they're actually, they just want to do their job, we're making their job a hindrance. And then when you see people standing around and the parents crying and this and that and everything, because if they stand up and say that kind of the thing about the police department, it's actually showed evidence of a positive nature. So with that, I'd like to give the police departments all around the county big praise, because I've been to several drug court graduations. I haven't missed one probably for 10 years, and it's just something to see, to go over there and be touched by that. So I want to thank them again for coming out. He said they would, the last time he was here, I think it was 3 years ago, they painted this building. So they'll be back. He said another drug court. He said just hopefully not the same people. So there you go. I'd like a reminder real quick before we get into the main business. We have street dance on the 11th. Food will be at 6. The band's coming in at 7. We got a couple of new tents. We got one brand new one to set up. So we should be no hindrance from the weather. I'm hoping everything works. But with that, I'd like to see a good group of people come out and enjoy themselves. I have a letter from Bluegrass Engineering. And it basically, y'all got one. It basically states that we had the bid opening Tuesday. There was 4 bids received on the Oak Street interceptor line that we've talked about for 2.5 years now, or 2 years. It's the one we got the big cardboard check and $395,000. Didn't cost us a penny. So we got that. That's taking the sewer line from back here under the railroad. Big, 40-something thousand, I think, was just a permit to drill under the railroad. So with that, it takes it down. It's going to be a big asset to our old sewer lines. And the bids range between $216,990 to $454,000. So the Atkins Excavation Company got the bid. And then he did the analysis of all the square footages and went back, which he has to do, the engineer does, and make sure that anybody, especially the ones that's low and looking that they're going to get it, but not that, just everybody has to be the criteria of the linear footage of everything has to be put in and all the bores and everything. You couldn't miss anything just to make your bid accidentally lower. So all the numbers came out, and that was a great, great thing for us. Because with the economy as it is and everything escalating, I thought it would be way over what the money was for us. Now, that still does not entail some of the legal fees for the engineering and what have you, but we're going to be in the ballpark, I'm hoping, of $80,000 excess that we still have to put into water and sewers. So that would be something that Chad is already looking into. We have a couple areas that needs it. So then the next thing that I have...
I make a motion that we accept the excavation.
That's what I'm going to. Yeah, the next one was that. I had two papers.
$216,990.
Right. And he says here, I'd like to get a motion been made. So that's the second paper. So, motion been made.
A second.
Seconded.
Connie?
Yes.
Tim?
Yes.
Jenny?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Teresa?
Yes.
All righty. Moving right along. We have a mutual aid agreement that I'm going to have to sign as we do between us and the county. And I actually went over and asked them about it, and for some reason or other, we hadn't been thinking on that basis. But it's that time of year where we help them, they help us. So with that, this is something I think y'all just give me the permission to sign. Motion to make me available to sign this again as we have in the past.
Motion to enter the mutual aid agreement with the county. Somebody wants to make it.
I'll make that motion to enter the agreement with the county, mutual aid agreement.
Second.
Tim seconded. Pull them again.
Joe?
Yep.
Connie?
Yes.
Teresa?
Yes.
Joe? Jenny?
Yes.
Twice. And Tim?
Yes.
Okay, new budget. We got the budget ordinance of 2022-07.
First reading, ordinance number 2022-07, an ordinance adopting the City of Lebanon Junction, Bullitt County, Kentucky, annual budget for the fiscal year July 1, 2022 through June 30, 2023, by estimating revenues and resources and appropriating funds for the operating of the city government. Whereas an annual budget proposal has been prepared and delivered to the City Council, whereas the City Council has reviewed such budget proposal and made the necessary modifications, now therefore be it ordained by the City of Lebanon Junction, Bullitt County, Kentucky as follows. Section 1, the annual budget for the fiscal year beginning July 1, 2022 and ending June 30, 2023 is hereby adopted as follows. Under the City General Fund balance carried forward from previous year, $107,500. Under General Fund, the total estimated revenue is $1,166,525. That's a total resources available for appropriations, $1,274,025. Total appropriations under the general fund, $1,176,330. Excess of resources over or under appropriations would be over $97,695. $97,695 is the estimated carry forward. Under the cemetery fund, the balance carried forward is $62,500. The estimated revenue is $19,800. That gets us the total resources available for appropriation at $82,300. Total appropriations is $24,650. Excess of resources over appropriations is $57,650. And that same number is what we're expected to carry forward for the next fiscal year. For the municipal aid and LGEA fund, estimated carry forward from last year's $40,000. Total estimated revenue is $50,100. That equals $90,100 as total resources available for appropriation. Total appropriations are $58,000. That leaves us $32,100 of resources over appropriations, and that same number is what's expected to be carried forward. We also have this year the ARPA fund, $229,936.95 are being carried forward. The city is expected to take in $254,038.78. That gives us $483,975.73 available for appropriation. Total appropriations are $483,975.73. So that leaves us $0 excess of resources over appropriations. Although I do expect probably all those projects won't get done this year and there will be a carry forward. In section two, this ordinance shall take effect on July 1st, 2022. This ordinance shall be published according to law. All ordinances or parts of ordinances in conflict with this ordinance or any part of this ordinance are hereby repealed. Shall any section, clause, line, paragraph, and part of this ordinance be held unconstitutional or invalid for any reason, the same shall not affect the remainder of this ordinance.
Heard the first reading of the ordinance. Any discussion? All right, then we'll go to ordinance number 2022-08.
First reading, 2022-08, an ordinance adopting the City of London Junction, Bullock County, Kentucky, water and sewer operation and maintenance budget for the fiscal year July 1, 2022 through June 30th, 2023 by estimating revenues and resources and appropriating funds for the operation of the water and sewer department. Whereas an annual budget proposal has been prepared and delivered to the City Council, whereas the City Council has reviewed such budget proposal and made the necessary modifications. Now, therefore, being ordained by the City of Lebanon Junction, Bullock County, Kentucky, as follows. Section 1, the annual budget for the Water and Sewer Department for the fiscal year beginning July 1, 2022, ending June 30, 2023, is hereby adopted as follows. Underwater, fund balance carried forward from previous year, $93,593. Total estimated revenue, $797,950. Total resources available for appropriation, $891,543. Total appropriations underwater, $782,375. Excess of income over expenditures, $109,168. For sewer, estimated carry forward balance is $95,500. Total estimated revenue is $858,500. Total resources available for appropriation, $954,000. Total appropriations, $853,760. That leaves us excess of income over expenditures under sewer at $100,240. The consolidated balance for water and sewer to be carried forward is estimated at $209,408. Under the consolidated water and sewer sinking fund accounts, we have a beginning balance of $567,869, an estimated ending balance of $632,178. So then an estimated balance of $511,316. Section 2, this ordinance shall take effect on July 1, 2022. This ordinance shall be published according to law. Section 4, all ordinances or parts of ordinances in conflict with this ordinance or any part of this ordinance are hereby repealed. Section 5, shall any section, clause, line, paragraph, or part of this ordinance be held unconstitutional or invalid for any reason, the same shall not affect the remainder of this ordinance.
The first reading of the ordinance 2022-08, any discussion? I'd like to find a date to have the second meeting for the second meeting.
What are we talking about? Tuesday the 14th? Tuesday or Wednesday?
Y'all pick.
I can't do it the 14th. Sorry.
What about the Wednesday?
I can.
What time?
6.
6 o'clock?
6.
So second.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you get your meeting that day.
I'll cover it.
Meeting 6 o'clock, and what was that date again, Tim?
Wednesday the 15th.
15th. And we're going to save it for another meeting to put with it.
Yeah, I'll talk to Eric. We can probably vote on the rezoning same night.
All right. Okay. Moving on, we're in a position where now we read an ad in the paper, those who've seen it. We're accepting applications for an office assistant and a public works worker. So that's in the paper, and we've got an application came in already. We're expecting more now that it's in the paper and everybody's seeing it. So that will take care of Karen's and Corey's leaving us. So, any discussion on that? Let's see. We ran the paper. We're going to run it this week and next week also, correct, isn't it? All right, last but not least on what I got is I talked to Matt, the engineer, today. And you heard from Eric and them where they're at with the buildings. And we did meet with them over the fact of the water and the sewers, which I'm touching base on that because, as he said, that handles everybody out there in our respect of what we need. We don't want this, that. We want everybody's water, sewers. And we sent them paperwork to get the, make sure that they understand paying for it and what have you, that's not being out of anything where we're striving to go. And with the digester portion, Synthica, they haven't come up. They have been working totally with numbers, with the state, the federals, and all their numbers of stuff that we have no control over. That's all on their end. And once they get that all entailed, the only thing they have done is they've sent a lot more numbers to Matt that will show the impact of the sewer system itself as to what degree the upscales that have to be done, the improvements. So, because the improvements is money, and that's where it's all going to be at. But we don't know where we're at with the amount of treatment and this and that, but it's not going to be anything done until it's reached the level to where the government says that's what we need to be. So he said he would be here tonight with anything else if it was, and he called me today and said no update on it whatsoever other than the fact they have sent the numbers in to the EPA and the water and the sewers and all that state level to what needs to be done. So I don't have any other news on that either. Anybody got any questions? All right, anything on the sign-in sheet? All right. Stephen Parrish, he's done his. Todd? Todd Crawford.
Just want to talk real quick about speeding in LJ. I think everybody's well aware, especially on our streets. I live on Church Street. 25 mile an hour road. I've witnessed at least one dog and two cats be killed personally. I'd say the average speed down that road, average, is probably 40 miles an hour, even around where our house is, which is close to two curbs. I just don't know anything to be done about that. I don't know. I've never seen the police pull anybody over there the whole time I've lived here on that street, and I guarantee you that 50% or more of the cars are well over the speed limit going down there. I don't know if, looking forward, if there's anything mechanically we can do. I wouldn't want speed bumps, but maybe speed humps or something like that that can handle the 25 mile an hour traffic. But I think just watching Facebook and things, the people I talk to around here, I don't think it's just on our street. I think it's on a lot of the residential streets, especially when you have a 25 mile an hour speed limit. It's just out of hand. And like I said, I really don't want to see a kid be that instead of a dog or a cat. And if there's anything we can do as a city to protect those people and everybody else, I think we should try to do it.
No, and I personally sympathize with what you're saying because I know for a fact a dog got killed up there in front of my daughter's house and what have you. And it'd be anybody in this town would be lying if they said they didn't see somebody speed down their street. I don't care where it's at. The bad thing is you don't have enough policemen to set one on every street. Now, Terry did get in the hot seat 2 weeks ago, different ones, and I don't know who it was calling him and fussing. One of the main was because we dropped the speed limit down through town. Why are they not sticking to it? So for a week, he sat up here in the welding shop every morning. Then he went up and sat on another street. He did go down to my daughter's and sat there one or two times, I ain't going to say every day, after the dog got killed for sure. And then last night, the state police was here looking for somebody that somebody had called in on that was speeding and swallowing tires and doing stuff. So they're actually trying to, and then we've doubled up the officers where we can at night. But I wouldn't stand here and lie to you and tell you that there's one on every street again. But if you see it and you know it and you see the same ones is doing it, there's nothing wrong with calling down here and telling us that this vehicle was doing this and that, and we can specifically watch that one, because, and we've had a problem with it. And then you got different areas, different speeds in behind the golf course. I mean, that's slow, and everybody goes back there and says it's too slow. Well, it might be too slow until you run over a child or something. So myself, I mean, I want them all to hold into it. So I appreciate your concern, and I will send him up there. And I mean, now, let me ask you this. Do you care if he sits in your driveway?
No. I
don't want him in my driveway.
He's welcome to sit in
I mean, that's what I'm saying.
Even if he sits at, like, Pike Street there, I mean, you catch him coming either
right,
way
right.
That street. I mean, you could get him coming around the curb there or coming down. I mean, there's plenty of places they can sit.
Right. Well, I actually had somebody come and tell me that they wanted him to come and sit in their driveway.
Yes.
Because they had a blind spot, and he said, if you sit in my driveway, you can get them. And they did. They got a couple. But in the same token, if you thought it would help your situation.
Well, like I said, I'm not really worried about our house. I'm just worried about, like I said, one dog got killed right in front of our house. I've seen two cats.
One got killed right in front of my daughter's house. I know it.
But it's just everywhere. It doesn't matter where you go down the street. And you see it.
Right.
And again, I don't think it's specific to our street.
It is a concern. It is. And I'll mention it to them, and then I'll try to get them to patrol a little bit more. And I've had them moving around, doing a few more different things. And we're trying to catch a few of them. And they've been watching. Obviously, everybody's trying to catch the ones that's doing the drug dealings and this and that and everything else. And stolen car was found. And, I mean, there's a lot going on. It just is. And,
but, I mean, even when they're driving down the street patrolling, I mean, they could pull them over then because they've got to come at them. They've got to catch them at some point when they're going. Because they come over down our street quite often. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying they don't do that. But it's just I've never seen them pull anybody over. And there's got to be instances where they probably passed somebody or had somebody come at them that was over. And I think if they just have a little... start pulling some pump people over and they see it, then people may start slowing down. So.
Right. And then, and the same goes for the theft. I mean, we've had a few things stolen here and there, and that's calmed down a little bit. And by the time you think you got a grip on it, then like yesterday, we found a car, and, you know, you just never know what's going on. And it seems like the bad guys know where the good guys are all the time. So, but I appreciate your concern, and if that's what you want me to do, I want to make sure I tell them in the morning. I'll tell him here but now, but he's not here, so.
He's on one on.
Huh?
He couldn't make it today. He's on one on.
Okay.
That's all
good.
Appreciate your time.
Thank you, bud.
Larry, I have a question. Is there any way we can get one of those signs that flashes you're speeding 25 miles an hour and put it in different places? Just because I don't think people really always look at their speedometer, and I'm just wondering if we can
I'm not saying
something.
We couldn't, but I do know that another city got it and used it, and there was a really, really large expense to it. So whether you got whether it's affordable or not, I don't know. Like you say, and then the sign would tell you you're speeding. But for the ones that knows they're speeding, they know they're speeding anyway.
I know. Sometimes when you first take off and, you know, you're got the gas down, and then all of a sudden you look down and you're like, whoa, I need to slow down. And just one of those signs is a gentle reminder. I didn't know if we could.
It's like I was talking to a person a while back, and it's not here. It's another city that... they actually got a company, the city doesn't do it, but a company come in and put all the cameras and all the stuff at all the intersections, and that company collects the money and gives that city a little bit of money, and people are getting it for no turning signals, no this, no that, and they've just got the city is about ready to hang somebody.
Now the interstate is backed up just
You're right.
So it's
you're
crazy.
Right. Yesterday.
No one obeys 35.
And I didn't know, but I mean, not to drag this out, but I didn't know it was a 9-car pileup up there yesterday.
No,
It affected north and south, and they was all coming through here.
Right. I said a good, just probably 15 minutes just trying to pull out onto 61, but that's what really made me notice it. I mean, I can see it from my back porch anyway, the traffic flying down through there.
Right.
But they were going probably 50. Thinking, really? I don't know where they were going, because then by the time I got pulled out, it was backed up all the way the other side of the dollar stores.
I turned the corner coming back from Barstown yesterday at Boston, and when I turned the corner, I was in traffic all the way to Lebanon Junction, sitting dead still. Mm-hmm. I never seen it. No worse. I haven't.
But, I know Terry, they can't sit out there every time that the interstate's backed up, but they catch a lot of people if they did.
Right. Alrighty.
Boost your revenue.
Yeah, there you go. We don't get the money, it goes to the county. Chaz, you got anything?
Telemetry. We need to get telemetry onto our water and sewer system because of this 5G network. My alarm system on these tanks does not work anymore. It is not compatible. So I got two quotes. The telemetry would be for the water tower road tank, which the water tower road tank, they'll put a transducer down into the tank, so I'd be able to control the level back where the control valve is at the interstate. Right now we don't control the level, we just keep it at a level. I have to manually go and turn this tank off and bring it down and then go back.
One five.
Before people run out of water pressure, it fills back up, so you get the turnover and the water don't go back. Then on the other tanks, it would just be an alarm, you know, we've got to have it, like it already happened. You remember when it happened at old Boston and ran it dry that night, that morning, the calls. Then there'd be the alarm at the main pumping station to call me if the pump goes down, so we don't run it over into the ditch, and we've got the telephone system. At the sewer plant, there's a loss of power. Because you cannot discharge into the Rolling Fork River, loss of power, because you've got no disinfection, the UV lights will be out. Now then, for the price on this, I got two bids. I got one from TNT out of Forest Knob, Indiana. It was $29,572.28. With an annual fee of $4,500 a year. Now the other one, the one I suggested we take, is lower. It would be $26,511, but its annual fee is only $2,100, and the first year is free. And it's a Wascon, they're out of Tennessee. The man that came here, the representative, lives in Erlanger, Kentucky. And the engineers had dealings with this company. He recommended it that it would be good for us. So I just need y'all to say yes on that. It'll be a,
yeah, he's got
when
the,
they do the installation
the
on the East Oak tank or the water tower road tank, they'll have to have another person. Because one's going to get on top, he has to have one on the bottom. He said that would be an extra $500 a day for that individual, how many days to take them to.
That's for one tank, right?
Yeah, just only one tank so that's going to be done to.
Yeah, one man can't install it, takes two at a day. So
far away.
And we've had a system all
right
along.
Now we got nothing.
But once they change to that, ours is done. I mean, we can't, it's like radios or anything.
So it's obsolete then?
Yeah, so right now.
2 weeks ago now, we got no.
Right now, you just got to hope you catch something that's not working at the right time.
What's the name of the company that you're with?
Wascon.
Wascon?
Wascon, yeah.
I make a motion we allow him to enter in negotiation with Wascon.
Yeah, we'll sign the agreement for the yearly.
Right.
Upgrade service.
It's an upgrade, yearly upgrade. Just like upgrades every year.
This is an annual fee. So
they actually check it, control it. A lot of they monitor it through our company. They monitor it through our company also, like everything else that we got involved with. So in doing, yeah, motion been made to go ahead and proceed with it. Joe seconds it. Call the roll, please.
Jenny?
Yeah.
Connie?
Yes.
Teresa?
Yes.
Joe?
Yep.
Tim?
Yes.
Alrighty. Terry's not here, and he was here on duty last night until 4 o'clock this morning. He went home for a little bit and come back. But, Chief Josh.
Council, you have your monthly run report in front of you. Last month of May was another busy month for us, total of 34 runs. You have the breakdown in front of you as well. Second page shows the type of incidences that we made in each category, as always. Majority of our run last month were medical assists assisting EMS. We did have several vehicle accidents, and of those, we actually had to extricate, cut cars open twice last month. So a pretty busy month for us last month. I do have a few other things. First and foremost, we're still waiting on our pickup truck that we agreed to almost a year ago to purchase. However, we did receive a VIN number finally. Scheduled production for the truck was June the 13th. And then Ford decided to take a 2-week furlough, and now it's going to be pushed back to the end of June, 1st of July now. So, but we do have a VIN number. It's in the queue, so hopefully that will be getting made pretty soon and have that moving forward with that. Let's see here. What's next? Meeting with the mayor this past week, wanted me to bring up a discussion about ARPA money being used. A few months ago, I brought to y'all's attention a list of certain items. Fire department requested the use of ARPA funds. Apparently, he was advising me now that some funds have been made available for a certain project of ours. The extrication equipment, the struts and the airbags that we requested. Mayor, what else did I
You want me to talk about it?
Well, I mean, that's fine. Yeah, go ahead.
No, that's fine. I mean, I can elaborate on that a little bit. As he did ask last time about it, and they give the presentation about the mass that would pick up the vehicles and the new this and that, and we didn't know. At that point in time, we're expecting some more money also, but that money was allocated for the pavilion at the cemetery and the lights at the park, with some proceed forward with our water meter stuff and lines that we talked about working on. Well, with the cost of inflation and everything else, and we've talked it over with everybody on the ARPA, what have, it was in the ballpark of 50-something thousand, went to 81,000. So that took more money right there than we thought, and the lights are expected to do the same thing. So in doing so, we cut short the leftovers that would have been left for something else. So if you don't have enough to do what you need to do, I told the chief we just back up, and if it's up to you all, we would go ahead and let him have. Because he had mentioned before, and I don't want to talk about something that you're wanting to talk about, but you already have. The airbag deal was $15,000. Y'all had that last time, if you don't still have it. $30,000 for the spreaders, cutters, and accessories. $6,000, if you'll remember, was for that washer extractor machine that they're hoping, well, they said it's going to be in the EMS building. So he could use that, but that would free us up to give him $45,000 of our ARPA money that we have in hand.
One question. The one thing that stood out to me is exactly what you just said. You had two extraditing in the two breaks that you had this month or in May.
Yes, ma'am.
Did y'all hold those up by men? Because that was my concern on why we need the pillow or why our city would need that pillow.
Okay, so you're talking about the airbags?
The airbag, yeah.
Yeah, so the incidents for the airbags are very, I won't lie to you, they're actually kind of few and far between. But with all this increased industry that's coming around, there's increased chances for using the actual airbags. Doing a lot of research, we use them at work. Obviously, I've never really got hands on them before, but they use pretty much for anything and everything. There have been several instances that we could have used the airbags. As the example that we gave a couple of months ago, we had the semi-trailer collapse onto that person. They were able to extricate them via a jack that they had on hand at that time before we were able to get there. With all this construction that's coming in, though, the instances of concrete falling, LSC communications out there, presses, the bags are anywhere between 4 inches wide, anywhere to 24 inches wide. We can get them in the small spaces, larger spaces to get things apart. So, yeah, of those extrications, the airbags specifically would have not been used in those instances. However, the struts that we were requesting and the extrication tools, the battery operated ones, would have most definitely been used. And that's just last month. This year alone, I think we've cut open probably 10 different cars already this month alone. So the instances of actually using the battery operated tools are becoming ever increasing more. As you just said, Mayor, a moment ago, we had a 10 car pileup yesterday, a couple involving semi trucks, and actually had to extricate one from that yesterday. It was a simple window punch and helping pop the door. You know, we try before we pry. We don't want to bust open, you know, do whatever more damage. But obviously, yes, I mean, the instances for the battery operated tools are ever increasing. The stabilization struts, absolutely ever increasing. The airbags, that is a brand new realm for us that we're entering into, and that will also be ever increasing as well.
I just remember in your presentation you stated the needs for those things.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
I wanted to make sure that
absolutely still there. Yeah, and I actually found out with my research, airbags aren't just for lifting and stabilization. You also use it for sealing as well. So hazmat incidents, if you have culvert pipes or whatever, you have a massive leak and you can't contain the leak, you can actually secure pipes, waterways, and things of that nature using these types of airbag systems to prevent runoff and hazardous material, you know, contamination in other areas. So there's a lot of different avenues you can go with that route with the airbag system.
I think at a proactive standpoint, this would be a good investment with the ARPA funds for us
we got it, so we use it, you know. And then two, he had a capital request sheet before and had that. And then the budget, as the budget was, as you've seen, we started with this and we went to zero, and we used every avenue we got for money allocated for it is. Well, on his capitals, he had some concrete work and this and that, which we didn't have the funds for. But in lieu of not having that, we do have the opportunity to get the $45,000, which is the fourth and the fifth thing on his list. So that would be... It's usable, we got it, let's do it, is what my thing is.
What's the difference in the weight of the battery operated versus the gas operated?
So they're generally about the same because the hydraulics are instilled versus actually running. So the fluid that's actually going through the hoses are still instilled into the battery operated tools, but they're more ergonomically designed to be able to handle them better instead of just being a flat surface. The weight, even though it's in the back, it's actually designed better. We have spec sheets. If there's multiple different brands, we get different quotes, obviously, to get the better price with the best tool possible. Plus also, like I said, ergonomically designed for the firemen, what's best for them as well in prices. So they're generally all within a couple $1,000 of each other, but just because it's more expensive and it's the best out there, that are, you know, most expensive as we were purchasing, obviously. But yeah, weight-wise, I mean, one tool is generally between 50 and 60 pounds. I've seen the lightest spreader is about 48 to 52 pounds, and the heaviest spreader is roughly 60 pounds. So they're only about 10 pounds.
Thank you.
Josh, how much weight do those pillows lift?
Oh, so they're different sizes, obviously lift different weights. The ones that I looked at earlier, generally a 12-inch by 12-inch pad will lift roughly about 20 tons. They have others that lift up to 50 tons each pillow. Some of them are multi-stacking, so you can lift heavier objects with different pillows as well. And it just depends on how you use them and everything else. So, yeah, so anywhere, I mean, you're lifting a couple hundred thousand pounds generally. So.
Need motion to use the ARPA fund.
I'll make a motion we use the ARPA funds for the pillows and the extracting equipment, battery-powered extracting equipment that you saw on this list.
Struts, airbags, and tools. Excellent.
Right.
Absolutely.
I'll second that. All right. We've got a motion made, regular seconded. Call the group, please.
Tim?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Connie?
Yes.
Jenny?
Yes.
Teresa?
Yes.
Thank you, Council. I appreciate it. A couple other things. I do apologize. I'll try to go through this quickly. Speaking with the IRST billing company, which I think last month we didn't have a quote for, the last quarter, by the way, I think we brought in, I think it was $12,000. I apologize. I don't have those numbers in front of us. But the first quarter for 2022, we brought in roughly $12,000 of that. I think for this fiscal year, we brought in roughly $27,000, almost $30,000 from billing through this IRST company. They emailed me the other day, an insurance company was requesting some type of resolution that our council allows them to bill by their rates. Our current ordinance that we have bills specific rates that were set back in 2011. Obviously, FEMA has changed their rates since 2011 in the past 10 years or so. So I wanted to bring to the council what we need to do
Attorney, how we resolve that old ordinance to reflect the new rates per the IRST billing company. How can we go about that?
I think probably our best course of action would be to amend the ordinance to just adopt their rate, and then we may have to review that annually to just stay, because I know theirs will probably change over time, and that's just probably something that needs to become housekeeping that we do every year to adopt their rate. But it would probably be best to amend the ordinance. A resolution would be quicker and easier, but from a legal standpoint, so if there's already an ordinance out there, I think it would be better to go ahead and amend it, adopt their rate, and then every year we can do that as housekeeping as their rate changes.
Okay. So this month I can get their rate of billing sheet, and next month I can present it to you all, and you all can go from there.
Yeah, if you get it to me before July, I'll go ahead and probably can have an ordinance amendment ready to go in July. We'll go ahead and get that change.
Fantastic. Excellent. Thank you. Next one, last month I meant to bring it up, obviously, with the show. It didn't get to be brought up, excuse me. The MOU that I presented to you all a couple months ago for the grant that we wish to apply for, the grant writer, I wanted to ask you all, have you all had a chance to look over any of that, the memorandum of understanding with him? Had any questions about that, I'd be more than happy to answer. I know Councilmember Preston, you had a couple of questions. To go ahead and answer that question for you. What you see in the MOU is exactly what you get. This grant writer is not writing grants, plural. He's writing us a one grant for this one apparatus. Absolutely. The assistance to firefighter grant is through the FEMA organization that happens once a year. And you can have multiple applications, but we're only requesting one application for a new apparatus, and he'll only be writing one grant for us for one. So all the rates that you see on the MOU and everything of that nature, that's it. What you see is what you get.
And you will pay the $1,500. It'll come out of the fire department's budget.
However the budget needs to come. Yeah, I mean, however that works.
I mean, I don't think he has grant money listed in there for that per se. Not that he couldn't change his money around, I guess.
But I just, it'll come out of the fire department.
That's what y'all say.
What's the apparatus that you're asking to write the grant for?
Just a new engine company. The last one that we got, obviously we purchased a couple of used ones in the past several years. The last new one that the city purchased was in 1999, and it's still completely operational. Fire trucks are getting stupid expensive, excuse me. A brand new engine, stock, nothing fancy about it whatsoever, hauls firemen, water, and hose, and has a pump on it, is roughly $500,000 to $600,000. And I know, I mean, obviously infrastructure is coming to the city, but we're not like Shepherdsville that can drop $2 million to purchase three brand new trucks. So going the grant process, like we talked about last time, you know, it's 10% or 5%, I do believe is what it was. So $700,000 apparatus, we paid $35,000 for that, you know, if we're awarded the grant. But it would be for an engine company, like what we have over there currently. So it would replace, or I wouldn't say replace, with all the infrastructure. Honestly, we need to continue adding to the fleet to continue our fire protection. So, but that would be the request for it.
I guess my next question is, where are you going to put it?
I was thinking that same
thing. Absolutely. It's a fantastic question.
How many trucks do we have there now?
I've actually got four in the front bay, two in the back bay, one sits outside, or two sits outside. Actually, my tanker sits outside, and my utility vehicle sits outside. Unfortunately, I don't think with the AFG grant we can request a station. I mean, no, that's unfortunately, we're now in this teeter-totter effect of, you know, more chickens than we have, you know, or more apples than we have baskets, or however you want to say that. So, but this grant, the way that I will say this on a positive spin of it, it's not an immediate, if we get it, here's your $700,000, go buy your fire truck. I mean, this grant opens in October and roughly ends in December. The process literally takes 12 months for them to sift through different multiple processes, and once you're awarded the money, then you can go out and start looking at different apparatus providers that are out there, find the best bang for your buck for the money that was allotted to you. Build times, the shortest build time that you're looking off the line is almost 6 months. So even if you all say yes now, you're still looking at almost 2 years before you even see a fire truck that's potentially in a firehouse. So I say that on a positive spin with all the infrastructure. Maybe in the future we could accommodate some type of extra building space or something of that nature. However that would look, that's just me being extremely optimistic. But that's, you know, that's how we look at it as well. So,
Do you have to have an answer tonight?
It would be best, because the quicker he can start working on it, he hasn't worked on this whatsoever without the MOU signed. That's his standards. He just doesn't want to get involved in something that doesn't need to be involved in. So the quicker we can get an answer, the quicker he can start working on this, because it's extremely competitive. You know, they drop, you know, it's a $500 million grant between the entire 50 continental United Kingdom states of every single fire department. So that's definitely
at some point in time when you apply for the grant or whatever. I mean, when would you have a total on what it would be that we was trying to get a grant for? I mean, we wouldn't just get an open grant for whatever. We'd have to have some kind of idea of what we were looking at spending. Just like your truck, when we bought a truck, time you had this, and this, you're up to this much. What would a $600,000 or $700,000 fire truck be in the end with what you feel like you would have to have?
Yeah, so that, I mean, and that's just a ballpark figure we keep throwing out, honestly. It all depends on how the grant reads and how the grant, you know, you could ask for the way this, I've never written for a fire truck, I've only written for equipment. Equipment is very cut and dry. But writing for a fire truck the way you ask for 600, they'll say, that's fantastic, we're only going to give you 450. And that's, here's your grant, have a great day, kind of thing. So I can talk more with him to look at actual numbers and see what we're coming for. If you all want to move forward with the MOU and have a better answer for you guys next month, absolutely. And I can get something in writing from him and have a presentation exactly what all this grant process entails and go forward from there.
I'm saying. That way you know where you're at instead of, well, we thought it was going to be $500,000 or $600,000, but we're wanting $750,000. Well, $450,000 is all we're giving you. The other city's only got to pay $300,000 to make up the difference.
Yeah. So honestly, no. So to answer that, excuse me. So yeah, whatever they give you is all you get to spend, and you have to spec out what. Now, if you want something more, yeah, you pay more.
That's what I'm saying.
But that doesn't mean we have to.
Right, yeah,
so
that's what
you don't get to spec out an apparatus until you know how much funds that you're getting. Yeah, absolutely. Because with our air packs, the last big grant that we got with our air packs, I think we quoted $125,000 for air packs, and they only came back with $118,000. And so we were able to actually work with the manufacturer of MSA, and they were like, yeah, no big deal. We understand this. Here's the stuff you wanted for this price.
Right, just price. They give you how much. Here's your budget that you're spending.
Yeah, so that's it.
What's he charged to do the grant writing?
I believe it's $1,500.
Whether or not he gets it or not.
Yes, yeah.
I'd like to see some kind of a proposal from him myself. I'd like to see him write it down. And I'd like to know a little bit more about it.
Okay.
Because I don't know the dollar figures. That kind of bothers me, going in something blind like that.
I understand. Yeah, I mean, 5% is all that we pay, but yeah, not knowing the top end number, I can understand that. So what exactly how that works. I can have him, he lives in Maryland, so I can have him come up and draft up something or whatever, email to me, and I can forward an email to you all and go from there. So, okay. The budget, you want me to discuss that now, or do we wait till the next meeting? A bit of rapid response increase that we discussed.
Oh, you can?
Okay, I didn't know when I needed to.
No, I mean, your budget is what your budget is.
No, that's not. So,
I don't give you what you're getting.
So what you all read on the budget earlier, the rapid response numbers that we have in there is roughly $54,000. Right now, I wrote all this down earlier. Here we go. Right now, it's $40 a day per person for three people for a 9-hour shift. We're paying out $43,680. What I budgeted and requested was for the $54,600, and that was for an increase of $10 per shift, so $50 per person per shift over there. And I was told that I need to come to the council to ask you all for the increase for that budget to reflect that price, because that had to be approved through you all's ordinance.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
So when we started this back in the beginning, they were going to be there Monday through Friday, and that was because everybody else was working. I'm not really seeing anybody over there very often.
Yes,
so
ma'am. Times are extremely hard, to be quite honest with you, and $40 isn't worth passing up overtime at somebody else's job or picking up different shifts. Don't get me wrong, an extra $10 isn't going to break the bank either.
Right, because it's a volunteer fire department.
Yes, ma'am. We're still having trouble, to be quite honest. It pains me to say it's to get volunteers to make fire runs that they need to be. And it's, unfortunately, inflation, I mean, you can blame it on whatever you want to blame it on. It's just times are getting tough. And, you know, the days of having people working in town, being able to leave their jobs and make the fire runs and stuff are long gone.
Right, and that's why we was doing it for the week during the week, and we hadn't done anything on the weekends, and now I'm seeing them down there on the weekends, but I don't see them in the week.
Yeah, because most of the people that work during the week are able to work during the weekends. That was something that we opened up last year with the subscription money that we added on to it to increase our range of protection as well for the rapid response. So these numbers reflect the 7 days, not just the 5 days as well.
So,
I mean, to be quite honest with you, I mean, if you want to be extremely competitive, I mean, please do not get me wrong. We're not looking for a paid fire department whatsoever. We're not there. We won't be there for years, to be quite honest with you. But, you know, to increase our responses and the people that are able to make those responses, we have to be competitive with other fire departments that are offering incentives for their firefighters to be able to make runs. That's kind of where we're at. You know, just to have the kindness of their heart, that's only about 25% of somebody's response. You know, the other responses, you know, unfortunately, we're in this day and age of what's in it for me, and that's that's where we have to kind of be. You know, that kind of ties in with a year-end reimbursement as well. You know, we offer these small incentives that people enjoy, but for rapid response, several of these people, they come from out of county. Some of them live in Meade County, Hardin County. Some of them live up in Nichols and Louisville, and they're just looking for some extra skill time in a sense. You know, they want to help out, you know, so it helps, but at the same token, you know, offering them more for competitive pay increases the protection that we have in the city.
Okay. So, thank you.
Well, let me ask you this question, Josh. Correct me where I'm wrong, but I think when this all started, this whole program started, it was because we didn't have anybody here during the week. And after 5 o'clock and on the weekends, we were in pretty good shape. Now, you're wanting to increase this, but what I'm hearing, what I've seen, we don't have the people that are now. We'll throw more money to cause that or fix that problem.
Hope so. Respectfully, I don't know what the answer is. Well, I mean, we're trying everything that we possibly can. You know, every day that we're off, we work 10 days a month, and every day that we're off, I mean, our run numbers are ever increasing. You know, last year we hit almost 500 runs. This year we're on par to make almost 600 runs as it is. You know, and it's not going to slow down, honestly. And not giving them anything isn't going to make them show up. So hopefully giving them something more will help increase their willingness to be able to show up. You know, I mean, a tank of gas now, God, everybody knows that cost. You know, and I don't even know if that's $50 for some of these people as far as they come to want to help out. You know, because the runs that we are making, they're not seeing other places. The amount of extrications, the amount of fires that we're making, you know, on the interstate, car fires, tractor-trailer fires, different type of rescue and assists, things of that nature. A lot of people don't see it their full-time job, so they come to these volunteer fire departments, they can spend more time, so to say, and, you know, trying to reimburse them, help them out. You know, when this program started, you know, 10 years ago or however much, you know, we were fortunate that we were in that situation that after 5 p.m., you know, after the publishers let out of work, half of our workforce, fire department came back, you know, able to make runs. Now, unfortunately, I've got guys working third shift UPS, so they're not even really available during the day. We've got guys working on call, so, I mean, I never know when they're going to be available. Other ones, I mean, they've got small children like myself, you know, so my wife, she got a new job, so I'm trying my best to make fire runs when I can, you know, so it's just the nature of the beast. You go anywhere, volunteer fire service is just going down the toilet, and I don't mean that because of, you know, the training or the it's just all responses, you know, it's extremely difficult, you know, so hopefully, I'm not saying throwing money at it is the absolute answer. I don't know what the absolute answer is. I'm more than happy, I've got several painters over there, I can start passing out painters now, and you guys can help me make fire runs. That would be the absolute answer. But, I mean, for what we have in the force right now, I'm hoping that an extra $10 a day would be a slight more incentive. You know, honestly, to be extremely blunt with you, if you want to be extremely competitive and have really great coverage on a volunteer basis, I mean, you need to look at $75 to $100 a day per person is really what we're looking at. And that's up there. So that's just being extremely blunt. So, I could go on. I could keep talking on a rant here. If you guys need firemen, I could talk forever. But that's just where we're at. I mean, hopefully a $10 increase will help kind of boost it up. Saying, you know, we're trying to invest in them, show them we're investing in them. We're buying top notch gear. You know, like going over tonight's going to be absolutely a fantastic hoopla. You'll probably hear a lot of screaming because we'll be excited that you all approved the use of extrication tools and purchase of extrication tools and struts, stuff we've been needing for a long time. We're going to be head over heels over that. I know we are. You know, so I mean, hopefully we can continue that trend and move forward. So, excuse me.
Well, I do know, too, that in his budget, in lieu of the decision over raising it to 40 to 50, his budget was accredited from him, allowing it to be 50. So the money is in there. He moved his money around where it's there if y'all want to see him do it. And y'all raised it from the last time to the 40. but it's not like I'm just kind of in his corner on this. In lieu of, he put the money in there for it.
So right, should and, you I, and not I understand raise it, that it's in his
should
budget.
You not raise it, he has money he used for something else. That's his prerogative, it's his budget. But he did allow and allocate the 50 based into the 54,000.
No. And that's to have?
It's $50 a day.
Yeah, that would increase it from the current $40 a day, three firemen, to $50 a day.
And that's awarding them some per diem allowances for coming and gas, as he said, and their meals and stuff.
Because we're not
paying them. We're not paying them to be
fired. In the last month, have you had any runs you could not fulfill because you didn't have any personnel here?
I'm extremely embarrassed to say yes. There was at least three calls I know off the top of my head that there were absolutely nobody. I was in Lexington. He was in Shepherdsville. Mr. Martin was in E-Town, so the three chiefs were working our full-time jobs, and everybody else. I mean, I can't have absolute accountability of everybody and where they're at each time, but I mean, coming back to it, yes, there were three incidences that we had no volunteers respond.
So who takes that, Southeast or Boston?
It depends on the response and what it is. We have automatic mutual aid agreements for certain type of incidences as kind of an automatic fail-safe, that if it is a legitimate event, that somebody's coming regardless, structure fires, auto accidents, car fires, things of that nature. I believe those incidences, one of them was a police assist with a large amount of debris in the roadway. For whatever reason, we were dispatched on that and nobody showed up. Another one was a medical assist that by the time we realized that nobody was responding, was able to contact dispatch and EMS had control of the incident. I couldn't tell you what the third one was, but I know there were at least three that we had no volunteer to respond.
I'm going to ask you one more question.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
Have you talked to your people down there? Does this $50 show any hope of them being a little bit more involved?
Honestly, no. I haven't asked them about the $50 raise because I don't like to get hopes up. And that's no disrespect to you all. I just don't want them to think that something's coming if it's not able to be done. I'm hoping, like I said, that if I show them that the city and myself are willing to fight and invest in them to protect the citizens and what they're doing, I'm hoping that would increase the amount of days that they're coming down.
Was it already in his budget, you said?
Yeah, it's in his budget.
So
it's in his budget. Yeah. You as a council are trying to raise it from the previous 30, 35, whatever it was, to 40.
40.
I think it was 3 men at 30, and y'all made it 40 for two. Or
yeah, that's great. Yeah, yeah.
Something
yeah.
25. I don't remember the exact number, but to get the number up, you took it from 3 to 2.
Yeah.
To
so prior to subscription funds, yeah, we were 25 for 3. We took the money, consolidated to 40 to 2. Mm-hmm. Then after the subscription money started coming in, we increased it to 40 to 3. Added that third person on 7 days. Now we're just asking for the extra $10 boost per day.
Well, so. A question I got, and I know you know the answer, is based on volunteer firemen in town that would be willing to help you, mm-hmm. if whatever, is there a criteria that you have on your training? Because I'm hearing people saying they're not going to do it because of the training status that they have to have. And they've come to me, and they've come to the council, and they've talked to us about it. We can't be on there because we can't reach the credibility level of the training that they want. Is there a level between volunteer firemen such as me or him or anybody wanting to be on there that would take it to a level where that person is applicable and helpful during the day that doesn't reach the expertise area of excellence that y'all would achieve up here?
Absolutely.
So
State Fire Commission has your 40-hour standard. Mm-hmm. So you got certain training codes, mm-hmm. and like PP is like 4 hours. You meet that minimum standard, 40 hours, then you can safely, for yourself and your fellow members, be able to operate because you have the minimal training. Kentucky State Fire Commission for volunteers require 20 hours of training a year.
Right.
Okay. Pay departments, they require a minimum of 100, but there's more stipulations to that. So 20 hours a year, and we do trainings every Tuesday, at least three trainings a month.
Sure.
So
if a state requires 20 hours a year, and me being on the volunteer fire department, which I'm too old now, years ago, if I wanted to be, if I come and they got accredited 20 hours with y'all, then this person or persons that's been fussing.
Basic 20, a simple test out, just making sure the information that was given to you, you obtained, you can safely operate in that function. So you go out and you don't get hurt, because we don't want that on us.
Right, because I don't know y'all. I don't know y'all's criteria of level, but I know when a guy says I'm going to another fire department because I can't be down here because I'm not, my question, I guess I'm asking, is he credible enough to go to another fire department and be on the volunteer fire department per their standards and be on that fire department, but not here?
Yeah, so that's what I'm asking. Yeah, so our standards, honestly, are no different than any others. Like Chief Brown was talking about, you know, the Kentucky Fire Commission is holding our feet to the coals about our training and however they do. We're actually doing audited on our training hours the 16th of this month to make sure everybody got exactly what
they need. And I mean, obviously, training is critical.
Yeah,
I know
so,
that.
But, and I'm really curious who this person was. I'm not asking for his name right now, but for him to come to you all and say that he wasn't qualified, with nobody with it, somebody with absolutely no fire experience whatsoever wants to become a volunteer fireman, I've got a stack of applications over there. You tell them to come on over. We provide the training, and like he's talked about, for them to participate in the rapid response training or to actually start making fire runs legitimately, all they have to do is require a minimum of 20 hours training, which takes them no more than 2 months to obtain. Then after that, they're fully, I wouldn't say fully, because then after that, you continue training to receive your level one firefighter, which is 150 hours, your level two firefighter, which is 400 hours, and so on and so forth. So to hear that, that's
I mean, what I'm asking is, I know you're on a paid fire department, and he is. I don't want the criteria to exceed the fact we have no local people that would be involved with the 20 hours. I mean, okay, let's just go right here. Chief Phillips told me he couldn't drive the truck unless he made a meeting and got his last.
Well, I mean, it
and he's on the fire department and drives the trucks, and he drove it yesterday out there. He said, I'm not supposed to get in there because I'm not credited enough with y'all's standards
and
to drive
Chief
the
Phillips
truck.
Chief Phillips has not attended a train since November 2020.
Yeah. So honestly,
so, I mean, he's not even meeting state fire commission
right.
standards.
Right. I mean, if you asked me, and I'm sure if he was standing here, he'd be one to tell you. You know, he said, if I'm here and there's nobody here and that truck needs to roll, I'd like to know I can get in that truck and drive it.
But it's the difference of having somebody safely qualified. Versus, I know how to drive a big truck. I'll get it there. And then when they get there, they don't know how to operate.
And I mean, it's an admirable question for me to ask you. So we know that if there's nobody in that truck, but they was here or not.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, like I said, Terry Phillips got on a truck and rolled it yesterday.
I knew that.
And then there's no discipline coming.
I didn't see y'all hanging or nothing, so I knew that was
just
right.
When you passed me earlier today. Mm-hmm. Just shortly before that, I was over speaking with Chief Phillips, and we were discussing.
And I mean, believe me, I'm for the standards and the levels up to what we need. Absolutely. I don't want somebody driving my truck, my company truck, with no driver's license or not the ability to drive, and I understand that. But I just like to know where the levels are because I know a volunteer fire department I don't feel like would be of the expertise that Lexington Fire Department would achieve in their standards. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I just don't see it in some of the other areas. And I've stopped in some of the rural towns and asked them, and they're happy-go-lucky with their towns, and everybody's out here collecting money and this and that. And I just want to know where we're at with our standards.
Well, I mean, respectfully speaking, over the fire departments, we're trying to strive and become not foundation savers, but lifesavers or property savers.
Right.
You know, I mean, because some of those other places, a lot of their firemen aren't qualified to wear air packs because they have facial hair.
Yes.
So a standard that we have is you're not allowed to have facial hair because of OSHA and FEMA, right. Or excuse me, of the NFPA and OSHA, that says if you have facial hair, then you're not allowed, you can't have a seal, therefore you enter an IDLH atmosphere, immediately danger to life and health.
I mean, by asking you answer, it makes me feel better knowing
yes.
what I'm talking about.
Yeah, so
I don't want to talk to somebody about something I don't know what I'm talking about.
State Fire Commission standards.
Basic
so, Lebanon Junction's requirements are the same as the state's requirements.
100%. Yeah, no, that's where we get our requirements from.
That's where we get the requirements from. That's where we follow. Yeah. That's
I didn't know if you enhanced them and made them greater. Or.
Yeah, so I mean, with the basic 20 that he talks about, we asked for a basic 40 is what we've increased it to. But once you achieve 50% of that, you start making fire runs, and you have to achieve the other 20%, other 20 hours of that, the other 50%, before you know, you're out of your 90-day probation.
So you have enhanced it over what the state says?
For their safety. So 20 hours by the state says you can start making fire runs. We adhere to that 100%. They start making fire runs. They get a pager. They're making fire runs. Okay. Within their first 90 days, we've asked them to get 40 hours. Now, does that happen all the time? No, because of jobs and everything else. But we ask them to get there.
But they're still on the fire department, correct?
100%.
Okay. So that's what I was going to ask. So if they don't go from 21, 22 to 40, if they don't go to 40, they're not off the fire department.
No, at the end of 90 days, we review with them, hey, you're a couple hours short in this area. We're trying to find classes for you to increase your safety, but nothing's changing. We're moving forward.
Right.
So exactly. We need a motion to increase this to $50 a day. I'll make that motion.
And I'll second.
Motion been made, seconded. All in favor? That's good enough.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. That's all you got?
Oh, yes, sir.
All right, bud. All right, we're calling council. Tim?
I'm good. What are we talking about tonight?
Yeah, we knew we were going to.
Yeah.
Joe?
Good.
Okay.
I'm good.
Connie? Let's see, yeah.
Good to go.
And for those who don't know it, Allie's been in the hospital and out three times in the last 3 days. So she's got issues. She said she wanted to be here and she's not, so there you are. And before I close, I'd like to put a special thanks out to everybody that's involved in the National Day of Prayer. It was a huge success. I liked it. Everybody there had a good time listening to it. And again, our VFW here merged with the one at Shepherdsville, and they had a veterans participation thing at the courthouse the other day at 10:30 in the morning. That was nice. So with that, I entertain the motion to adjourn.
No, let's just stay.
I don't care.
I'll make that motion that we adjourn.
Second. Motion made second. All in favor of adjourn. Anyway.
Yeah, so we